Hank and Fred glanced at each other. Barris, sightlessly gazing straight ahead, smiled.
"Is there anything else you want to say at this time?"
Hank said to Barris.
To Fred, he said, "Maybe we should send an officer with him to get his evidence?"
Meaning, to make sure he doesn't panic and split, doesn't try to change his mind and pull out.
"There is one thing I would like to say," Barris said. "Mr. Arctor is an addict, addicted to Substance D, and his mind is deranged now. It has slowly become deranged over a period of time, and he is dangerous."
"Dangerous," Fred echoed.
"Yes," Barris declared. "He is already having episodes, such as occur with brain damage from Substance D. The optic chiasm must be deteriorated, since a weak ipsilateral component, but also,"
Barris cleared his throat,
"a deterioration as well in the corpus callosum."
"This kind of unsupported speculation," Hank said, "as I already informed you, warned you, is worthless. Anyhow, we will send an officer with you to get your evidence, all right?"
Grinning, Barris nodded.
"But, naturally,
we'll arrange for an officer out of uniform."
"I might," Barris gestured, "be murdered. Mr. Arctor, as I say,"
Hank nodded.
"All right, Mr. Barris, we appreciate this, and your extreme risk. And if it works out, if your information is of significant value in obtaining a conviction in court, then naturally—"
"I'm not here for that reason," Barris said. "The man is sick, brain damaged, from Substance D. The reason I am here—"
"We don't care why you're here," Hank said. "We only care whether your evidence and material amount to anything. The rest is your problem."
"Thank you, sir," Barris said, and grinned and grinned.
Chapter 13. Back at room 203, the police psychology testing lab, Fred listened without interest as his test results were explained to him by both the psychologists.
"You show what we regard more as a competition phenomenon than impairment. Sit down."
"Okay," Fred said stoically, sitting down.
"Competition," the other psychologist said, "between the left and right hemispheres of your brain. It's not so much a single signal, defective or contaminated. It's more like two signals that interfere with each other by carrying conflicting information." "Normally," the other psychologist explained, "a person uses the left hemisphere. The self system, or ego, or consciousness is located there. It is dominant because it's in the left hemisphere always that the speech center is located. More precisely, bilateralization involves a verbal ability or valency in the left, with spatial abilities in the right. The left can be compared to a digital computer, the right to an analogic. So bilateral function is not mere duplication. Both percept systems monitor and process incoming data differently. But for you, neither hemisphere is dominant, and they do not act in a compensatory fashion, each to the other. One tells you one thing, the other another. It's as if you have two fuel gauges on your car," the other man said, "and one says your tank is full, and the other registers empty. They can't both be right. They conflict. But it's, in your case, not one functioning and one malfunctioning. It's... here's what I mean. Both gauges study exactly the same amount of fuel, the same tank. Actually, they test the same thing. You, as the driver, have only an indirect relationship to the fuel tank, via the gauge, or, in your case, gauges. In fact, the tank could fall off entirely, and you wouldn't know until some dashboard indicator told you, or finally the engine stopped. There should never be two gauges reporting conflicting information, because as soon as that happens, you have no knowledge of the condition being reported on at all. This is not the same as a gauge and a backup gauge, where the backup one cuts in when the regular one fouls up."
Fred said, "So, what does this mean?"
"I'm sure you know already," the psychologist to the left said. "You've been experiencing it, without knowing why or what it is."
"The two hemispheres of my brain are competing," Fred said.
Yes.
Why?
Substance D. It often causes that, functionally. This is what we expected. This is what the tests confirm. Damage having taken place in the normally dominant left hemisphere, the right hemisphere is attempting to compensate for the impairment. But the twin functions do not fuse, because this is an abnormal condition the body isn't prepared for. It should never happen. Cross-cueing, we call it, related to split-brain phenomena. We could perform a right hemispherectomy, but...
Will this go away? Fred interrupted. When I get off Substance D?
Probably, the psychologist on the left said, nodding. It's a functional impairment. The other man said, it may be organic damage. It may be permanent. Time will tell. And only after you are off Substance D for a long while. And off entirely.
What?
Fred said. He did not understand the answer. Was it yes or no? Was he damaged forever or not? Which had they said? Even if it's brain tissue damage, one of the psychologists said, there are experiments going on now in the removal of small sections from each hemisphere to abort competing gestalt processing. They believe eventually this may cause the original hemisphere to regain dominance. However, the problem there is that then the individual may only receive partial impressions, incoming sense data, for the rest of his life. Instead of two signals, he gets half a signal, which is equally impairing, in my opinion. Yes, but partial non-competing function is better than no function, since twin competing cross-cueing amounts to zero recept form. You see, Fred, the other man said, you no longer have...
I will never drop any Substance D again, Fred said, for the rest of my life.
How much are you dropping now?
Not much. After an interval, he said, more recently, because of job stress.
They undoubtedly should relieve you of your assignments, one psychologist said. Take you off everything. You are impaired, Fred, and will be a while longer, at the very least. After that, no one can be sure. You may make a full comeback. You may not.
How come, Fred grated, that even if both hemispheres of my brain are dominant, they don't receive the same stimuli? Why can't their two whatevers be synchronized, like stereo sound is?
Silence.
I mean, he said, gesturing, the left hand and the right hand, when they grip an object, the same object, should...
Left-handedness versus right-handedness? As, for example, what is meant by those terms with, say, a mirror image, in which the left hand becomes the right hand.
The psychologist leaned down over Fred, who did not look up.
How would you define a left-hand glove compared to a right-hand glove, so a person who had no knowledge of those terms could tell you which you meant, and not get the other, the mirror opposite?
Well, no left-hand glove, Fred said, and then stopped.
It's as if one hemisphere of your brain is perceiving the world as reflected in a mirror. Through a mirror, see? So left becomes right, and all that that implies. And we don't know yet what that does imply, to see the world reversed like that. Topologically speaking, a left-hand glove is a right-hand glove pulled through infinity.
Through a mirror, Fred said. A darkened mirror. He thought, a darkened scanner.
And St. Paul meant, by a mirror, not a glass mirror. They didn't have those then, but a reflection of himself when he looked at the polished bottom of a metal pan. Luckman, in his theological readings, had told him that. Not through a telescope or lens system, which does not reverse. Not through anything but seeing his own face reflected back up at him, reversed. Pulled through infinity.
Like they're telling me. It is not through glass, but as reflected back by a glass. And that reflection that returns to you, it is your face, but it isn't. And they didn't have cameras in those old days, and so that's the only way a person saw himself. Backward.
I have seen myself backward. I have, in a sense, begun to see the entire universe backward, with the other side of my brain.
Topology, one psychologist was saying. A little understood science, or math, whichever. As with the black holes in space, how... Fred is seeing the world from inside out, the other man was declaring at the same moment. From in front, and from behind both, I guess. It's hard for us to say how it appears to him. Topology is the branch of math that investigates the properties of a geometric or other configuration that are unaltered if the thing is subjected to a one-to-one, any one-to-one continuous transformation. But applied to psychology. And when that occurs to objects, who knows what they're going to look like then? They'd be unrecognizable. As when a primitive sees a photograph of himself for the first time, he doesn't recognize it as himself, even though he's seen his reflection many times, in streams, from metal objects. Because his reflection is reversed and the photograph of himself isn't. So he doesn't know it's the identical person. He's accustomed only to the reverse reflected image and thinks he looks like that. Often a person hearing his own voice played back, that's different. That has to do with the resonance in the sinus. Maybe it's you fuckers, Fred said, who are seeing the universe backward, like in a mirror. Maybe I see it right. You see it both ways, which is the... A psychologist said, they used to talk about seeing only reflections of reality, not reality itself. The main thing wrong with a reflection is not that it isn't real, but that it's reversed. I wonder. He had an odd expression. Parity. The scientific principle of parity. Universe and reflected image. The latter we take for the former, for some reason, because we lack bilateral parity. Whereas a photograph can compensate for the lack of bilateral hemispheric parity. It's not the object, but it's not reversed. So that objection would make photographic images not images at all, but the true form. Reverse of a reverse. But a photo can get accidentally reversed too if the negative is flipped, printed backward. You usually can tell only if there's writing. But not with a man's face. You could have two contact prints of a given man, one reversed, one not. A person who'd never met him couldn't tell which was correct. But he could see they were different and couldn't be superimposed. There, Fred. Does that show you how complex the problem of formulating the distinction between a left-hand glove and...
Then shall it come to pass, the saying that is written, a voice said. Death is swallowed up in victory. Perhaps only Fred heard it. Because, the voice said, as soon as the writing appears backward, then you know which is illusion and which is not. The confusion ends, and death, the last enemy, substance death, is swallowed not down into the body, but up in victory. Behold, I tell you the sacred secret now. We shall not all sleep in death.
The mystery, he thought. The explanation, he means. Of a sacred secret. We shall not die. The reflection shall leave, and it will happen fast. We shall all be changed, and by that he means reversed back suddenly, in the twinkling of an eye. Because, he thought glumly as he watched the police psychologists writing their conclusions and signing them, we are fucking backward right now, I guess. Every one of us. Every one and every damn thing. And distance, and even time. But how long, he thought, when a print is being made, a contact print, when the photographer discovers he's got the negative reversed, how long does it take to flip it? To reverse it again, so it's like it's supposed to be? A fraction of a second. I understand, he thought. What that passage in the Bible means, through a glass darkly. But my percept system is as fucked up as ever, like they say. I understand, but I'm helpless to help myself. Maybe, he thought. Since I see both ways at once, correctly and reversed, I am the first person in human history to have it flipped and not flipped simultaneously, and so get a glimpse of what it'll be when it's right. Although I've got the other as well, the regular. And which is which? Which is reversed and which is not? When do I see a photograph, when a reflection? And how much allotment for sick pay or retirement or disability do I get while I dry out? He asked himself, feeling horror already, deep dread and coldness everywhere. Wie kalt ist es in diesem unterirdischen Gewölbe? Das ist natürlich. Es ist ja tief. And I have to withdraw from this shit. I've seen people go through that. Jesus Christ, he thought, and shut his eyes.
That may sound like metaphysics, one of them was saying, but the math people say we may be on the verge of a new cosmology so much, the other said excitedly, the infinity of time, which is expressed as eternity, as a loop, like a loop of cassette tape.
He had an hour to kill before he was supposed to be back at Hank's office to listen to and inspect Jim Barris's evidence. The building's cafeteria attracted him, so he walked that way, among those in uniform and those in scramble suits and those in slacks and ties. Meanwhile, the psychologist's findings, presumably, were being taken up to Hank. They would be there when he arrived.
Oh, this'll give me time to think, he reflected as he wandered into the cafeteria and lined up. Time. Suppose, he thought, time is round, like the Earth. You sail west to reach India. They laugh at you, but finally, there's India in front, not behind. In time, maybe the crucifixion lies ahead of us as we all sail along, thinking it's back east.
Ahead of him, a secretary. Tight blue sweater, no bra, almost no skirt. It felt nice checking her out. He gazed on and on, and finally she noticed him and edged off with her tray.
The first and second coming of Christ, the same event, he thought. Time, a cassette loop. No wonder they were sure it'd happen. He'd be back.
He watched the secretaries behind, but then he realized that she could not possibly be noticing him back as he noticed her, because in his suit he had no face and no ass.
But she senses my scheming on her, he decided. Any chick with legs like that would sense it a lot, from every man. You know, he thought, in this scramble suit, I could hit her over the head and bang her forever, and who'd know who did it? How could she identify me? The crimes one could commit in these suits, he pondered. Also, lesser trips, short of actual crimes, which you never did. Always wanted to, but never did. Miss, he said to the girl in the tight blue sweater, you certainly have nice legs, but I suppose you recognize that or you wouldn't be wearing a microskirt like that.
The girl gasped.
Ah, she said. Oh, now I know who you are.
Well, you do? He said, surprised.
Pete Wickham, the girl said.
What?
He said.
Aren't you Pete Wickham? You always are sitting across from me. Aren't you, Pete?
Am I the guy, he said, who's always sitting there and studying your legs and scheming a lot about you-know-what?
She nodded.
Do I have a chance, he said.
Well, it depends.
Well, can I take you out to dinner some night?
I guess so.
Can I have your phone number, so I can call you?
The girl murmured. You give me yours.
I'll give it to you, he said, if you'll sit with me right now, here, and have whatever you're having with me while I'm having my sandwich and coffee.
No, I've got a girlfriend over there. She's waiting.
I could sit with you anyhow, both of you.
We're going to discuss something private.
Okay, he said.
Well, then I'll see you, Pete.
She moved off down the line with her tray and flatware and napkin. He obtained his coffee and sandwich and found an empty table and sat by himself, dropping little bits of sandwich into the coffee and staring down at it.
They're gonna fucking pull me off Arctur, he decided. I'll be in Sinanon or New Path or someplace like that withdrawing, and they'll station someone else to watch him and evaluate him. Some asshole who doesn't know jack shit about Arctur. And they'll have to start all over from the beginning. At least they can let me evaluate Barris's evidence, he thought. Not put me on Tem suspense until after we go over that stuff, whatever it is. If I did bang her and she got pregnant, he ruminated. The babies. No faces. Just blurs. He shivered. I know I've got to be taken off, but why necessarily right away? If I could do a few more things, process Barris's info, participate in the decision, or even just sit there and see what he's got. Find out for my own satisfaction, finally, what Arctur is up to. Is he anything? Is he not? They owe it to me to allow me to stay on long enough to find that out. If I could just listen and watch, not say anything. He sat there on and on, and later he noticed the girl in the tight blue sweater and her girlfriend, who had short black hair, get up from their table and start to leave. The girlfriend, who wasn't too foxy, hesitated, and then approached Fred where he sat hunched over his coffee and sandwich fragments. Pete, the short-haired girl said. He glanced up. Pete, she said nervously. I just, have a sec. Ellen wanted to tell you this, but she chickened out. Pete, she would have gone out with you a long time ago, like maybe a month ago, like back in March even, if...
If what? He said.
Well, she wanted me to tell you that for some time she's wanted to clue you into the fact that you'd do a whole lot better if you used, like, say, scope.
I wish I had known, he said, without enthusiasm.
Okay, Pete, the girl said, relieved now and departing. Catch you later. She hurried off, grinning.
Poor fucking Pete, he thought to himself.
Wait, was that for real? Or just a mind-blowing put-down of Pete by a pair of malice-head types who cooked it up seeing him, me, sitting here alone? Just a nasty little dig to... Oh, the hell with it, he thought.
Or could it be true, he decided as he wiped his mouth, crumpled up his napkin, and got heavily to his feet. I wonder if St. Paul had bad breath.
He wandered from the cafeteria, his hands again shoved down in his pockets. Scramble suit pockets first, and then inside that, real suit pockets.
Maybe that's why Paul was always in jail the latter part of his life. They threw him in for that. Mind-fucking trips like this always get laid on you at a time like this, he thought as he left the cafeteria. She dumped that on me on top of all the other bummers today. The big one, out of the composite wisdom of the ages of psychological testing pontification. That and then this. Shit, he thought. He felt even worse now than he had before. He could hardly walk, hardly think. His mind buzzed with confusion. Confusion and despair. Anyhow, he thought, scope isn't any good. Lavoris is better. Well, except when you spit it out, it looks like you're spitting blood. Maybe Micron, he thought. That might be best.